law with you?
I'm a nationally syndicated radio talk show host. I'm on 170 stations across the country. I could be indignant as I possibly wanted to be with these people.
I agree.
Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies.
Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at SchoolSucksShow. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username SchoolSucksPodcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
Hey, everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks. Today is March 6th. Brett, where are the March shows? They are on their way, I assure you. And today, a little supplemental installment. I had the pleasure of being on Free Talk Live, the night where the most people listen, the Saturday show, last night. And as we were sitting in the studio and getting ready, we were going over some topics. I said, you know, I posted this article in my School Sucks group, and it got quite a response. Yeah, the Milo Yiannopoulos article. I said, man, I don't know if we should really get into this on the show. We could wind up going over the line with this one. So I said, look, I don't think it's something to lead off with. If we hit a drought with phone calls or we go through our other stories really quickly, I can bring this in. Before I could even finish, Mark had pulled it up on his computer and he said, nope, we're going with this. Oh boy, you just say Milo Yiannopoulos on the radio and watch what happens. This is our first non-4.0 show of 2016. It won't be the last. We're actually going to take every fourth month off from doing a theme for more of a wild card month. So if you have suggestions that don't fit into a theme, this is the time to get them to me, because in April, we're going to be on a theme vacation. And I've got some other stuff planned for that month. So this is a supplemental show, but I always appreciate the opportunity to be on Free Talk Live, especially the Saturday show. Now, many of you remember I used to co-host Free Talk Live back in 2014. I left the show. Then, as many of you know, Mark left the show when there was an outpouring of listener support. He came back for the weekend. I happened to be in Keene for the weekend, so things just came together perfectly for the three of us, Mark, Ian, and myself, to sit down together and do this show, and I thought I would share an edited version of it with you. I cut out everything that does not relate to the race subject, and based on the response to the Milo article, I realized that there are people in the audience who are interested in hearing this discussed. So that's what this supplemental installment of the podcast is all about. Ooh, would you like me to read you the article before we get to the Free Talk Live portion of the show? Because we barely even touch it. I think we get like one or two paragraphs into it. I'm not even sure Mark pulled up the right article, but it doesn't even matter because we read so little of it on the show before the phones start lighting up. I posted this in the School Sucks group, and my little caption was, chant, unsafe, unsafe, unsafe. Now, if you've heard my story about my teaching experience, between the years 2002 and 2004, I was the lead teacher of a specialized campus at a private boarding school in Vermont called the Bennington School. And the Bennington School had the reputation for being the place that juveniles would go as a last stop, a last warning, before they were locked up in juvenile jails. And I taught for 2 years on one of the least desirable campuses on that school. And I think one of the reasons why is that most of the population were students who were dealing with sexual abuse issues. Well, I obviously am committed to preserving the anonymity of everybody who went through that program. I will say that we had to deal with certain types of behavioral issues and psychological issues that were basically foreign to many other parts of the school. The story that I've told many times on the show in the past is that these kids had been made to feel like they were completely untrustworthy, completely incapable of being independent. And the example that I always give is that when a staff member would turn their back on a group of students together or walk out of the TV lounge temporarily, like even just for a second, the students would start to chant almost in unison, unsafe, unsafe, unsafe. And as I tried to make some changes to the program, because it felt pretty yucky to work in an environment like that, I raised the question a couple of times in administrative meetings. Are we planning to mainstream these kids back into the real world? Because they are not being really prepared for that if they are so easily led to believe that they are unsafe. Long story short, the program did change as a result of questions like that. And I think that was good for me and for the population that my staff and I served, getting rid of that very serious problem. But that's how colleges work now, essentially. And I think that those environments are much more, supposedly, about preparing people to enter the real world. But this story out of Breitbart.com about what happened when Milo Yiannopoulos traveled to the University of Pittsburgh is quite tragicomic, so I want to share it with you now. Pitt students in tears and feeling unsafe after Milo Yiannopoulos event. By Charlie Nash. The University of Pittsburgh Student Government Board held a public meeting on Tuesday to discuss the traumatizing visit the night before from dangerous homosexual and Breitbart tech editor Milo Yiannopoulos, during which students described themselves as feeling hurt and unsafe, both hurt and unsafe in quotes. Quote, during his talk, Yiannopoulos called students who believe in a gender wage gap idiots, declared the Black Lives Matter movement a supremacy group, while feminists are man-haters, unquote, according to the student paper The Pitt News, prompting a handful of 20-something-year-olds to feel upset. Quote, just because we have to be neutral with our funding doesn't mean we're personally neutral, announced board member Jack Heidecker at the meeting. I hurt yesterday, too. Quote, so many of us shared in our pain. I felt I was in danger, and I felt so many people in that room were in danger, proclaimed Marcus Robinson, student and president of the Pittsburgh Rainbow Alliance. Robinson also suggested that counselors should have been provided in another room to protect students who felt traumatized by Yiannopoulos' opinions. Quoting again, this is more than hurt feelings. This is about real violence. We know that the violence against marginalized groups happens every day in this country, claimed social work and urban studies major Claire Matway. Quote, that so many people walked out of that event feeling in literal physical danger is not all right, unquote. Presidents of the College Republicans and fellow student Tim Nerozzi responded to the complaints by proclaiming, quote, I'm not here to rain on your parade. We put a trigger warning on our flyers for the event. We never claimed it would be a family-friendly or politically correct lecture. I do realize that some people were generally hurt, and I'm not going to ignore that, but free speech should not trump safety. That's how it's written. I think he means it the other way around. We need to see the school work around that. Student Government Board President Nasreen Hiran is reported to have teared up after hearing students' experiences as a result of Milo Yiannopoulos' talk on Monday. Quote, we're very sorry people are feeling the way that they are, and that was not intended. And we're sorry people are not proud to be at Pitt, she expressed in deep remorse. The public meeting was announced in a letter sent out to students by the Student Government Board, stating, in light of yesterday's event with Milo Yiannopoulos, we feel compelled to write the Pitt community regarding Student Government Board's stance on his views and the reasons for which the funding request for this program was approved. If you were in the audience and you were disgusted and hurt by the speaker's remarks, we understand and empathize with you. If you felt marginalized and disparaged by many comments he made regarding your identity and the opinions of others who disagreed with him, we understand your feelings. To the students of color in the audience, we can only begin to imagine how painful it was to hear what both audience members and the speaker said regarding race and social justice issues in this country. Finally, to the survivors of sexual assault, we undoubtedly support you. SBG, Student Government Board, has funded and taken an active role in many events, including the UNDI 500 Race Against Sexual Assault, lectures by Bernice King and Laverne Cox, and has taken a major role in the implementation of the It's On Us campaign on Pitt's campus. These are just some of the numerous events that take an alternative perspective from last night's speaker on the issue of race, gender identity, and sexual violence on campus. We as an organization wish to make something clear. The decision by Student Government Board to allocate funds for this speaker in no way represents an endorsement of his views or opinions. We hope to move forward from what took place last evening, but understand the hurt and pain that it caused. Students are welcome to attend tonight's public meeting at 8:45 in Nordy's Place to share their perspectives and viewpoints during either of our two open floors. An email sent out to Pittsburgh students, a joint event between the Rainbow Alliance, Campus Women's Organization, and Black Action Society, is also set to take place on Thursday to, quote, respond to the hate speech and harmful events that have transpired, as well as provide a safe space for those who have experienced trauma, been triggered, or felt any kind of pain because of the events, unquote. The reactions of students over a non-compulsory and extracurricular event featuring a gay journalist expressing a difference of opinion are a worrying sign that academia is failing. These students, who are legal adults and on the cusp of entering the real world, yet they're in tears over the fact that someone, who they need not even listen to, disagreed with them. University is no longer a place for new ideas, discussion, and intellectual debate. It is a place of safe spaces, no platforming, and trigger warnings. Students are taught to believe and agree with a single narrative and doctrine, turning them into narrow-minded and unchallenged pawns, with any form of resistance or difference of thought being classified as hate speech. Pittsburgh may be the Steel City, but it appears its students are made of softer stuff. Shabam. But is it that simple? Are there really such clear protagonists and antagonists in this story? I actually don't think so. And, well, I certainly share concerns with those editorialized concluding paragraphs in the Breitbart article about this issue on college campuses. It is quite possible that Milo Yiannopoulos is a bit of an overcorrection for that problem. And what we're winding up with here is a situation, highly volatile situation, where no one wants to listen to anyone. Let's actually play a short clip from Milo's University of Pittsburgh appearance. There is video of this. It's on his YouTube channel. I'll link it in the show notes. From his own description, published March 1st, 2016, went out to the University of Pittsburgh on my dangerous faggot tour. Had a little talk, got protested, dealt with it brilliantly, and I think maybe changed a few hearts, or at least triggered them. Funniest part, tiny signs printed on dorm ink jet printers too small for me to see. I had to have them read the signs aloud because I couldn't fucking read them. I'm not quite sure why, but I do really like this guy. All right, here we go.
Yeah, does anybody see the videos of what happened to me at Rutgers? Standing in front of a room, looking fantastic. Being very sensible and very funny. And I say something like, you know, it'd be nice if universities were places of learning with free and open access to knowledge and people exposed to different points of view. The response from feminists to this was to leap up, smear themselves with fake blood, and shout, "This man preaches hatred!" This is the state of the progressive left now, and it's a sort of weird coalition of people. They're very much the minority, they're very weird people. Does anybody know any social justice warriors? Do you have any social justice warriors in the hall? They want to identify one of you. One idiot. Anyone here? Some other idiots over here. Okay. Let's interrogate some of the crazy things that these people believe. Do any of you believe that women are paid less than men for the same work?
Yes.
Right. Very dumb. Why you believe that, you're told it by the media, you're told it by your professors, it is a sort of socially appropriate thing to say.
You are the media!
Who wants to be the guy who...
2, 4, 6, 8, stop the violence, stop
Come see me later. justice always prevails, the Danny supporters are always louder and more brilliant than the rest. It's a pretty strong contingent here. So what I was going to say before they made a fuss and left, because of course that's what you do when you don't have arguments, rather than running the danger of sticking around for the Q&A where I might ask you questions back, by far the best thing to do is to chant and be an idiot and wander out. So I know as soon as I ask questions of the people in the audience, they start to leave quite quickly.
But race, along with feminism and cultural issues, continues to play extremely well in the mainstream and alternative media because it's massively entertaining. Any broaching of the topic almost immediately shuts down critical thought and makes it very, very difficult for some people to listen to dissenting opinions. And hilarity often ensues if you are able to overlook all of the downfall of civilization type implications of it. The conversation that we had on the show is certainly not as heated as it could have been, but I think it's worth listening to because it provides an interesting microcosm of the larger conversation. Here we go.
Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. You're invited to join us here on the radio waves. We'll give you our toll-free numbers as well as the Skype username that will allow you to bring up anything you want to discuss. That is why we call the show Free Talk Live. Joining you in the studio tonight, it's Ian,
Brett,
and Mark.
Brett Vinod back behind a microphone here on Free Talk Live. Hey, Brett, how are you?
I'm terrific. It's so nice to be back for the first time since August 2014. How
has
about
it been
that?
Has it really been that long?
Since I've been on the show, yeah.
Jeez. You were on for a period of time. You'd moved out to Keene for a temporary basis, and we had you on a weekly basis, and it was great.
Yeah, I was just in the process of exploring the state at the time, and I spent, I think, 6 or 7 months out here in Keene.
And now you're back out in the Manchester area. You got a fancy apartment with a really nice studio. I was there just the other day.
Thank you. And yeah, and I'm actually looking for my next stop after Manchester.
That's right. You're planning another move somewhere inside New Hampshire.
I like to move every year.
Really?
Yeah.
That is unusual, don't you think? I mean, moving's kind of a hassle.
It is. It's a major hassle. And I feel like my feet are planted pretty firmly where I am right now. And I fancy myself a bit of a minimalist.
Okay.
So I do like to just have enough stuff that I'm, you know, comfortable picking it up and taking it someplace else.
Relatively quickly, small load of stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, a U-Haul truck full.
I don't know if that's a minimalist. If you are
a minimalist is like two suitcases.
Yeah, like if you can put it in one car, I would say that's a minimalist.
Yeah, I'm a minimalist with respect to like a U-Haul truck.
Okay.
Like I don't need the 25-footer.
You don't have a storage facility. You're keeping everything in one place.
I do have a storage facility.
All right, you're definitely not a minimalist then.
I don't know what you're talking about.
What do you mean?
I said I fancy myself a minimalist. I didn't say I actually met the definition. Yeah.
You would like to be a minimalist, ideally at some point in the future.
I would like to get rid of a lot of stuff that I have, but I am very attached to my home studio for School Sucks.
Well,
so,
yeah. I mean, I'm the same way.
I fancy
way.
Myself as rich and not having to work, but that's not true either.
Yeah. I mean, I'm the same way. I like to keep it simple. I like to keep life simple. I like to have as few things in my life as possible, but in order to do the things that I do, I have to have certain stuff.
Yeah, and exactly.
So there's a certain minimum that I have to maintain, but I would prefer to not have that much, but I do. Anyway, if you want to tell us about your keeping stuff habits. Our number here, 855-450-FREE. I don't know why you keep pointing at my screen, Mark. I can't read sign language, and I don't know what you're trying to tell me. The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We also have Skype at Skype username lrn.fm. So you're telling me you have some sort of article you want to talk about?
Yeah.
Is that what's going on here?
Yeah, I've got that.
Okay.
We were discussing that Milo, yep. Panalosis fellow before the thing, and I've got that article.
Okay. Yeah, I'll give a little background.
Who is this?
He is a writer for Breitbart, and I think he really became more prominent with the whole Gamergate scandal a couple years ago.
Okay.
And he is currently out on a kind of provocateur tour of America's colleges and universities, trying to stir up some crap with the people that he would pejoratively refer to as social justice warriors, trying to tell them why they are wrong about many of their impassioned causes, and it's causing quite a bit of trouble, as I think Mark will get into here in a second.
One of the things that really sort of rankles you know, folks on the other side from him is that he is homosexual.
Yes.
Right? So it's much more difficult for somebody who, you know, like... The social justice warriors span the gamut, but...
Yeah, what is a social justice warrior?
It's the new iteration of what used to be called politically correct. Okay. So, you know, they want you to sort of accept everything. And...
Accept anything that goes against what they accept.
Right.
Right. So it's tolerance to the point of intolerance. So if you were, like, more traditionally conservative or you had religious attitudes towards... gay marriage, you would not be. That's intolerable. So it's kind of funny that it's tolerance taken to the point of intolerance.
Okay,
and, that sounds accurate.
So the biggest issues right now within the social justice movement are Black Lives Matter and feminism, but also cultural sensitivity is another big one. Have you heard the term cultural appropriation?
Yes.
I've probably heard it, but I couldn't
tell you
what
it means. We talked about this on the air with the Halloween costumes.
Where you're not supposed to wear certain costumes?
Cultural appropriation is when you act like something somebody else decides you're not.
Okay.
So if, for instance...
So it's offensive for someone to wear an Indian costume, an American Indian costume, when they were a white person, was the idea?
Right, I suppose, but many American Indians look, you know, people that self-identify as American Indians look awfully white to lots of people. So this gets to be a very complicated issue. Mm-hmm. Certainly there are costumes and ways to dress that are... insulting to other groups, but just because somebody wears a Cinco de Mayo t-shirt doesn't mean that they, you know, hate everybody from Mexico. That's
ridiculous. They like to party,
right? And it's, you know, ridiculous because Cinco de Mayo doesn't
but it's not an aggressive act. See, like, if this was a legitimate response to aggressive acts against certain types of people, whether they were women or black or homosexual, fine. You know, like, justice is a real concept that I think a lot of people strive for, right? Mm-hmm. But this is now in the realm of cultural appropriation. It's like attacking people for their ignorance in dressing up like a Native American or eating Chinese food, you know, would be a form.
That's offensive to some people?
There was recently a dust-up in a college cafeteria over this. They didn't want, them to be serving certain types of food because it was culturally appropriative. Now, you give these people an inch, and I think there's a lot of timidity towards this, like, hey, stop. And this is what Milo is all about. And he has this suit of armor, and he'll say this. He goes on Fox News. He goes on other...
What's the suit of armor?
That he's gay.
Right.
So he'll say...
Right. He is not a heterosexual male, so therefore they can't just train the cannons on him and boom, boom, boom. You, exactly. you white men who are heterosexual and cisgendered have ruined everything. Well, I'm like, but hey, I'm just a minority of one over here.
It's kind of like the approach of, if you want to criticize the military, get a veteran out to do it, right?
Right. That's the approach.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So Milo, what's his name? Milo what?
Yiannopoulos.
Yiannopoulos. All right.
And Yiannopoulos.
Is he Greek?
Yes, but he's actually, the name is Greek. He is actually British. He has a British accent.
Ah, okay.
He's a handsome, well-dressed man. And
as you'd expect.
He's very well-read. He's very bright. And he goes to
these... He's tearing them up.
Yeah, he goes to these colleges and he presents them with facts. And it is not going well on a lot of these campuses.
Yeah, a little bit here. He says, in 2016, battle lines will be drawn on one side. The people of all colors, genders, and orientations are rallying around the flag of freedom of speech. On the other, a nasty set of authoritarians are rallying around around a flag that identifies as a flag only on Mondays and uses thee and them as pronouns and will get you fired or expelled from school if you forget it. Let me explain. In 2015, I saw the seeds of a movement begin to sprout across the internet. Even in fear-gripped halls on campuses, young people began to stand up and challenge the humorless, divisive, identity-obsessed elites that have taken over our cultural discourse. Now, I really should give a trigger warning at this point. If you are a social justice warrior, you may be triggered by what I have to say. So it's time to turn off the radio and go play with your Legos and blow some bubbles and find your safe space, because this is somebody who disagrees with those folks. And I think that I absolutely do agree with him. Colleges are places of learning. This stuff is rampant on colleges, university campuses more likely than colleges, and it needs
to be questioned. Why is it more likely to be on a university campus versus a college? Isn't that just a funding difference or something? What's the difference between the two?
Well, here's one theory, and I'd be interested to hear what you think too. College campuses, really due to the faculty, are places that are significantly shielded from reality.
Right.
Most of these people who are explaining the world to these young kids have never been out in the real world. So
that's a problem.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll continue the discussion. 855-450-FREE if you want to join us. This is Free Talk Live. It's the live Saturday edition. You're invited here to share with us whatever happens to be on your mind. We're talking about someone who's really stirring it up on college campuses, Milo Yiannopoulos.
Yep.
And we're going to get back into that or get deeper into what exactly is going on there. He's challenging a lot of the beliefs that some of these college students have of cultural appropriation and safe spaces and things like that. Our toll-free number,
third wave feminism.
Our toll-free number here, if you want to join us, is 855-450-FREE. Maybe you're familiar with this person and his work. You're on a college campus. You want to share your experience. Please do. Brett Vinat joining Ian and Mark in the studio here for our live Saturday show. And Brett, you've been telling us, and Mark, I guess you've got a story about this guy, Milo Yiannopoulos, how he's stirring it up out there on college campuses.
Yeah, he's in his article here. He's talking about what college campuses are like, and he describes, people who are, I guess, what he calls social justice warriors. You know, the PC police, these kind of folks, as humorless, divisive, identity obsessed elites.
Now, wait a minute.
That have taken
you go
over
on
cultural discourse.
Okay, but you said you feel like that would be more so at a university than a college, and I don't think you ever really explained why that would be.
Yeah, I was in the process of explaining that, but there's a culture that's set up in the universities because I think a lot of the professors themselves are shielded from reality. So one way,
but
that
not at a college.
No, colleges and universities. Are we?
I thought
Mark said that there was a difference between university and college.
I want to make sure that we're talking about. So I'm not talking about your local community college isn't infested with social justice warriors. What I'm saying is the larger the institution, the more usually the older and more prestigious it is, uh-huh, the more likely they're going to have people who have never worked a day in their lives there who want to optimize the language. They understand the power of language. They want to optimize the language in a way that they feel is going to shape the world in the fairest fashion that they want to shape it. And, you know, they believe that, for instance, you know, they just don't care about people who are whatever traditional, roles there are out there. If you had your day, then, you know, now's the time for other people to have their day. So if you're male,
but
then you're
out. What's the difference between a university and a
university
college?
Is school after 16th grade. So a college.
So universities have more than 4 years, is the idea?
That's correct.
Okay.
I would say it's a problem, but in this case, it's a problem that applies to colleges and universities.
That's what I would think. I mean, I hadn't heard there was a difference really between the leftiness.
Some are better than others,
places.
And the smaller the place, I think the less of a difficulty you're going to have.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with what Mark's saying about the age of an institution and the kinds of people that it attracts. So, I mean, one name that's probably come up on Free Talk Live in the past is Paul Krugman. Somebody who has a tremendous following of young, naive economic students, but hasn't really actually spent much time in the real world of economic thinking. Mm-hmm. I talked to a professor recently on my show, William Boyce. He's a Mises scholar, and he runs apologize for forgetting the name of it right now, out at Arizona State University. So this is quite a feat. Runs some kind of free market focused school out there. He said, you know, I graduated from my PhD program in economics back in probably the 60s, I'm guessing. He went out into the work world of economics and realized he didn't know the first thing about how economics actually worked. Hmm. So that's the idea of shelter. But that's actually being transferred now to students in ways that it really hasn't been before in this whole concept of the safe space, which is very much a kind of intellectual safe space. People
meaning
feel
safe from being challenged intellectually.
It's not presented that way by them. They say safe from being offended. Or made uncomfortable or scared by certain types of speech. But how do we grow intellectually and emotionally? Through being challenged,
Right? How else would
intellectually
you grow,
right? And otherwise. And now they're saying they want protection from those kinds of challenges. And that's exactly where this guy, even though I don't agree with him about everything, Milo, he loves Donald Trump. He calls Donald Trump daddy. I don't agree. I'm not down with all that. Right.
But you can handle the marketplace of ideas, you know, to borrow a phrase from Rush Limbaugh there. You know, I mean, it's in many cases these, I think the best way to spread ideas is to sort of gently talk to people about them. But there's sometimes when ideas get in a gladiator pit and they clash.
Right.
And that's fine.
And that's what those institutions are supposed to be about, deliberating through those kinds of controversies. And people grow because of it.
Now college professors are complaining because they have to give trigger warnings on things like Shakespeare and stuff. And it gets at some point or another, it's just ridiculous. You know, I mean, yeah, you're going to read an old book and they're going to use the standard male and female gender paradigm. And that is not an insult to you, you little baby. Right. Like, that's it. You know, if you have to go suck your thumb in the college provided safe space and play with the Legos and bubbles. I'm not kidding you. They have these things, the little places for people to decompress who can't handle the notion that literature had a male and female paradigm in it.
Yeah, I was about to say, now, Mark, you're doing something wrong there by saying bubbles and Legos. That's clearly a violation. But unfortunately, Mark is telling a true tale. There are actually rooms with locks on the doors and maybe pads on the walls where people can go and they can color.
Yep.
And they can play with blocks if they feel scared or uncomfortable with what is going on outside. And I see this to be as vindicating as it is for me, a man who runs something called the School Sucks Project.
That's right.
That the output of government schools produces this kind of situation in quote unquote higher education. Yes, that makes me feel like I've been right about a lot of things, but it's also terrifying when you think about how it will show up in the future.
And
yeah, no doubt.
Many of these people with their, you know, whatever their largely useless degrees, and I don't say
right,
that to
most
be
of them are going
to
leave school at some point and then get out into the real
most
world.
Most college students are graduating with largely useless degrees.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and say some MBAs are worth it, but you know, like things like doctor, engineer, lawyer, these people need degrees. After that, I'm of the opinion communication degrees, lousy. You know, if your French horn degree, yeah, sure. If you're going to go play in an orchestra for a living, that it was worth it. But otherwise, it was a big useless. Your gender studies, only if you're going to be a gender studies professor, and we have plenty of those.
The toll-free number tonight for you to join us here, live Saturday edition of Free Talk Live, our number 855-450-FREE, is Free Talk Live. It is Free Talk Live, Saturday edition here. Our toll-free number, if you want to join us, the number's 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Also, you can Skype in. The Skype username is lrn.fm. Okay, so we've been discussing this character who's been appearing on college campuses, Milo Yiannopoulos, and we've sort of scratched the surface of what he's been talking about, and apparently it's been really stirring things up. We'll continue that discussion with Brett Vinat from the School Sucks Project at School Sucks Project. Is it .com?
.com.
SchoolSucksProject.com. Great podcast, video cast. Let's go, though, first to Ralph, listening in New Jersey. You're on Free Talk Live. Hello, Ralph.
Yeah. Yes. Hello, how are you?
Hey, go ahead.
You know, as you very well know by now, I like to believe that the question should be asked to Obama about, you know, this, you know, quote-unquote Black Lives Matter. Because there's no doubt in anyone's mind, at least in my mind, there's no doubt that he's taking the side of these people, number one, and he's throwing his support with these people. But that being said, the question should be asked, okay? Does white racism has anything to do with, you know, the Black Lives Matter?
Does white what?
Does that racism?
White racism.
White bigotry. White bigotry, I should say. White racism, white bigotry.
First of all, I just want to point out, I don't agree with your premise. You said that Barack Obama is taking the side of Black Lives Matter.
He did meet them in the White House.
He met them. Well, that doesn't mean anything unless he's...
It says here, PBS, Obama defends Black Lives Matter movement.
Sure, talk is cheap. Unless Barack Obama actually stops police abuse of you know, people, black people, I guess specifically in this case, then he obviously doesn't care about black people's lives.
or do something to advance and uplift the plight of blacks in this country. Well, as I said before, this is not only a marginal group. In public opinion, they get a narrow support. Okay,
and what you're saying, Black Lives Matter has narrow support in public opinion. Okay.
In public opinion, I'll prove it to you.
All I'm saying is, just because some politician sits down with you for an hour and talks and makes some sort of public statement, doesn't mean that they're actually going to do something for you. Thanks for the call, Ralph. Toll free number tonight 855-450-FREE. You know, it's one thing for Barack Obama to pander to black people to make it look like he actually cares about the fact that they're being, attacked by police more often statistically than other racial groups. You know, he can act like that, but until he does something as the executive of the United States to change that situation, because he, he's the top cop, basically, then, it's all just talk. It's just talk from a politician. It means nothing.
Yeah, I think that the left for a long time, at least going back to the 1960s, has basically, especially in the ivory towers of the left in academia and in political, like policymaking, they've said, okay, who's going to be our next victim sock puppet? You know, is it going to be women? Is it going to be immigrants? Is it going to be black people? And I forget who came up with the phrase, the soft bigotry. Have you guys heard that before? The soft bigotry.
Thomas Sowell?
Yeah, the soft bigotry of low expectations. But all these conversations about, oh, what are we going to do for black people? I question the premise of that question. Like, wouldn't there be, why is the conversation beginning with this assumption that black people don't have responsibility like we all do? Because I think they do. Most black people know they do. And I think that when the left panders to them, a lot of people who are black are really insulted by that. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of these times, like whenever there's a racial flare up and Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson shows up, you can hear black people in the crowd going, "Get away from us."
You're not
our leader, and they just kind of position themselves in the front of the parade to take advantage of whatever this highly emotional situation is.
And the media
is.
Does focus on them because they're something familiar.
Oh, that's true. It's a super inflammatory issue. So the media love it. Every chance they get to jump in front of it, they do.
And that's interesting, the soft bigotry of low expectations. Michael Gerson, by the way, is credited with that. The idea is that somehow people who aren't of whatever the elite gender and ethnicity is, and now we're told that genders and ethnicities are just social constructs. So I'm not even sure if I'm allowed as somebody who might be identified as a white male to even use that terminology. But I'll just go ahead and go out on a limb here. Is the idea that somebody doesn't fit into that paradigm is, well, they less should be expected from them. But there's a lot of people out there that somehow managed to break through that. Mm-hmm. Maybe the glass ceilings don't exist except in the minds of people who allow them to.
Yeah. And I think that we also can't deny that government actions have hurt, black people by and large. I don't want to use the phrase the black community. I don't know what that means. There's no white community.
Yeah, it depends on what over time, what time frame we're looking at. But yeah, I think that's true.
Yeah, the militarization of police, the drug war, the welfare state have all
had disproportionately affected blacks.
But it's had a negative impact on black people. But I don't want to get sucked into what are we going to do to help black people kinds of conversations.
Well, what because you can I get do, the government out of the way.
Well, yeah, right. What you can do to help black people and all people, because to me, it's all lives matter. I'm not one of the Black Lives Matter supporters, but I think, their lives matter too.
Saying all lives matter apparently is an evil thing to do.
Is offensive? Well, anyway, I think it's true. And that includes the government lives. I want to see the government people become good neighbors. I want to see them treat their neighbors with respect and leave people alone who wish to be left alone. I think that right now, the government guys are doing some bad things to a lot of people. And so if Barack Obama actually cared about this, he could rein in the war on drugs, for instance. That's one thing. Could reschedule the different drugs on the drug schedule, stop the DEA from enforcing the insane war on drugs, basically shut it down. He could do that as the president. He has the ability to control the DEA, I believe. And so, that would affect black people's lives and other people's lives as well. And that would actually, help a lot of people be more free and, not be in prison. That'd be a big change, I think, a step in the right direction. And then, as you said, Mark, get out of the way. Well, that's more of a local government thing because they stand in the way of poor people. And of course, poor people tend to disproportionately be of minorities. But standing in the way of all poor people from creating wealth for themselves by creating government regulations that basically prohibit people from starting their own business and getting out of the rat race and creating, you know, some sort of product or service that they can market. It's the government that stands in the way. So you've got government standing in the way of black people and others from creating their own wealth for themselves, not working for someone else. And so therefore, well, if they can't start their own business legally, well, then let's go sell some drugs, because that's one way you can start your own business without having to ask some government permission.
Not in most metros. You know, you can't start your own business by selling drugs. You'll get knocked off by the people who claim the particular territories. So,
that
makes
that.
It very difficult. In many cases, I can tell you in Chicago, it's been reported that people that choose to work for gangs and sell drugs oftentimes make less than minimum wage for the amount of hours they put in.
Wow.
They could do better by putting on the McDonald's uniform and smiling while they hand you a bag
of
pink slime. Then what's that?
I've never heard those statistics before.
Once the industry gets locked down enough, the money tends to flow uphill, right?
Huh.
So that's all I'm saying. I don't know the specifics. I certainly have not infiltrated.
Normally the reason you get into selling drugs is because there's good money in it. So I can't imagine
you
why
might
someone
get into drugs because you don't feel like you have any other selling drugs because you don't have any other options. There's not, there's not other options in your neighborhood.
I've never met those people, but I don't live in those neighborhoods, I guess. Yeah. So,
and you know, back to the issue, like we can focus on what the government does, but I also think that the Black Lives Matter movement needs to be called to the carpet as well. And I think this is a phenomenon by and large, and it doesn't matter cause or race. Individuals are certainly capable of being smart and reasonable. Groups are usually idiots. You know, once you have that kind of collective mass hysteria momentum, and because this is by and large a movement, a fairly low information movement for young people who lack a kind of historical perspective, they are superimposing the racism that they learn about in college, like 1960s Mississippi, 1870s Reconstruction South, onto their experience in the world in the 21st century. And it's not the same. It's a disconnection from reality. So I think that, yes, racism exists. Yes, the experience for different races, there's definitely a distinction, but they can't apply, you know, that harshness of the 1960s or the Reconstruction South onto their experiences today. And I wish that would be clarified.
Our toll-free number tonight here, 855-450-FREE. You can join us on the radio waves. It's the live Saturday edition of Free Talk Live, 855-450-3733. Hour 2 coming up.
Free Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live, launching into the second hour of the live Saturday edition of the program. It's Ian here with you.
Brett.
And Mark.
And we invite you to our website. Go to freetalklive.com. You can actually create the content right there on the front page of the site. Other listeners have submitted news items, YouTube videos, fun stuff, whatever they find online they think's interesting. Then go to freetalklive.com, just as you can, and submit whatever you want. It's a Reddit-based system, so it's totally free to use. Just go and get your account set up at freetalklive.com. As we go to the phones and your calls and thoughts, we've been talking about Milo Yiannopoulos, who is a gay guy going around from college campus to college campus and on a speaking tour, basically with the intention of being an iconoclast. He's destroying ideas, these ideas of safe spaces and what else, Brett?
Well, an iconoclast has, I think, implied in it, like he's just going against the grain to go against the grain. And I think he gets a great deal of pleasure from doing that, for sure. Mm-hmm. But I think he sees himself as a kind of truth teller. You know, he's bringing the facts, and he wants basically the facts to be called prejudice, the facts to be called racist, the people to demand that the facts be thrown out. So this is a kind of test. He wants to break down these safe spaces. And I see him as being a kind of hero if part of his goal, and I don't know that this is the case, but if part of his goal, instead of just to be an antagonizer, is to actually try to return the college environment to a place of learning and sharing ideas and intellectual discomforts, which is how learning and growth happen, then I'm all for that. I think that this is a really laudable effort.
Well, Mark, you had an article written by him. We'll continue that here in a moment, but you can also bring up what's on your mind. Our toll-free number, 855-450-FREE.
Yeah.
Let's go to Derek, listening in Indianapolis to WIBC-FM. Derek, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead.
Thank you. First time calling in to
Welcome,
Free Talk
sir.
Live.
Thanks.
Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure.
I want to talk about the race issue. Number one, you are way off base when you talk about blacks have it better than in Mississippi, as if Mississippi in the 1960s was the only place in America, or Birmingham or the South, that had racism. New York, all these
Who
other
said
places,
blacks had it better in Mississippi? Was that someone on the show?
No. What you alluded to was that the overt forms of racism has, you know, been eliminated. Therefore, you know, you alluded to, you didn't say better, but you said the alternative is we have it better because our experience is we can't resonate with someone having overt racism like in Birmingham or Mississippi. So we can't resonate with racism as it is today. So therefore, we shouldn't, you know, we shouldn't be in the state. We shouldn't be transferring that experience to today, as if the only places that had racism were the overt forms. It's more dangerous now to have these covert forms of racism that are killing. The system is killing black people, black boys, especially locking them up, enslaving them in jails, and having them rot away for years for nothing. Now, forgive the loose analogy, but what if this, you know, and you talk about personal responsibility too. What if, you know, someone in Nazi Germany, would you tell a Jewish person to have personal responsibility for not being sent to a concentration camp? No, the system is still the same way as it was, such as places like Nazi Germany, as it is now. The system is taking us and killing us, putting us in these, you know, so-called these prisons that are reminiscent to gas chambers, killing us.
I'm not sure I disagree with much of what you're saying. I think the drug war is that you can't discuss racism in America without discussing the drug war. But at the same time that, you know, like I guess all I care about is sort of the legal system and how it prevents or allows people to interact, I guess. And I do think that the legal system can, you know, seems for whatever reason, the drug war disproportionately affects blacks than it does whites.
I think we all agree with that. I have a little bit of trouble with the Nazi Germany analogy, a systematic.
Of course you do, because those are white people that were taken through a system of oppression.
Actually,
you know,
didn't Hitler kill a lot of black people too?
Yeah, they couldn't leave either.
Hitler had a very specific type of white person that he liked, and everybody else was out of luck. But it was a systematic extermination of Jews, gypsies, people in surrounding states. And, you know, it brings up an interesting thing, because the progressive movement in this country, like in the early 20th century, they did have an active eugenics program that targeted blacks. And I think that the caller has brought up something interesting. I still don't like the analogy of Nazi Germany, and I'd be willing to talk about that more after the break.
Derek, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. This is Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE. Free Talk Live, the live Saturday edition. We have time for you if you want to join us here at 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. We've got Ian and Mark in the studio as normal. Brett Vinat is here from the School Sucks Project. I screwed up and called him Brent earlier. I have to apologize for that. I used to work with a guy named Brent in radio, and so sometimes I get the two of you confused.
Monkey Boy,
yeah, that's right. He got sick recently, but I think he's doing all right. Anyway, you can join us here, and you can also join Brett over on his show, which is the School Sucks Project, and that's done weekly?
Usually about bi-weekly. We've been averaging two
once
per
every
week.
2 weeks?
No, two per week.
Okay, because it can mean either, right?
No, I think one would be semi-weekly and one would be bi-weekly. Semi-weekly would mean...
Semi-weekly always means half of or whatever, like so twice a week in that case.
We'll get all this sorted out.
But bi-weekly, I believe, can mean both. I believe it can mean... Either one. It's one of those English things.
Well, yeah, that's English for you.
So anyway, Brett's here. SchoolSucksProject.com is his website. Let's go to George. He's calling from the road in Virginia, listening online via TuneIn. Hello, George.
Hello, gentlemen. Hey. I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I'd like to make a point about racism in America.
All right.
I am from Mississippi. I have lived in the eastern Arkansas, Mississippi area for 40 years of my life, all 40 of them. And I can explain to you that ignorance is a universal subject. I've recently just come back on my way back home from a trip from New Jersey, and I ran into a gentleman, and we had a discussion. I told him I was from Mississippi, and he said, well, I probably wouldn't want to go there because I would probably get lynched. This is what I usually have, because I am an ambassador to the South. I always explain this, that in 40 years of life, I have never once seen a man in a white sheet nor a pillowcase with two holes cut in it. I've never seen a burning cross unless it's on the side of a Methodist church.
For those that don't know, the Methodist symbol has the flame of Pentecost next to the cross, and it is by no means a racist symbol.
And what I'd like to make the point is, if America is such a racist country and we're so racist towards black Americans, then why is every – if you look, take a look around a professional sports arena, why is it that most of the players are black, but yet most of the people in the stands are white? Or take a look at Will Smith. Look how much wealth he has amassed. Because I can assure you, I know what the census says, and the census is only 10 to 12% black in this country. So if we're truly such a racist country, then why do you deem the success of many of these people?
Well, don't you think these are kind of selective examples, and by focusing on them, like just really, really playing devil's advocate, but I do agree with what I'm saying here. By just focusing on these selective examples, you're kind of overlooking the experiences that a lot of people are having, especially in places where maybe you haven't spent a lot of time, like downtown Baltimore, downtown Houston.
Well, I grew up in a city that was 80% black, and I can assure you I see more reverse racism. Mainly from the black leadership, trying to keep the good black citizens down. Take example, the city that I grew up in, 10,000 Eastern Arkansas, we had a school district that was dead last in the state of Arkansas. And we had some exceptional students. We tried to get what's known as a magnet school. Now, when I was in school, they were experimenting with Common Core. But what it basically does, it doesn't allow people to get up. When you're keeping people down, I don't care what color you are, when you're keeping people down and keeping them under your thumb, then you don't allow them freedom to grow. We had a lot of intelligent people of all races where I grew up, and we didn't get an opportunity because the black leaders of the community thought it would be a disadvantage for the other students that wasn't learning at such a fast level.
So they didn't want help coming from some other direction. They kind of said, no, these are our victims. You know, it's our job to pretend we're going to help them.
Exactly. And, much to the chagrin of many students, and most of the children, there was about 30 to 40 really intelligent children that come out of there, went on to college and received degrees, played college basketball, a little bit of, you know, everything, kind of mixed, very intelligent kids, but they were denied a decent education because the leaders of the community did not want people to rise above and get out from under their thumb.
This is pretty typical, right? I mean, it doesn't matter what the color of the people who – and by the way, I don't like the term leaders. These politicians aren't leaders. They don't lead me, and they don't lead most people. In fact, you'd be a fool to follow a politician anywhere. But generally, the people in power, they wield power over people of the same color and people of different color. They wield power because it benefits them and it benefits their friends. And some people wield power because they are racist, because they do want to oppress people who are different from them. But most people just wield power because of power. They just love to be in control of other human beings. It's something that, you know, gets them off to some extent. And it's a problem across all skin colors.
Yes, I agree with you. And also in my town, when I was a child growing up, it was 25,000. And we had two major industries. One was Mohawk Tire. And because of a strike led by those same leaders, as whatever you want to call them, it caused our plant to close, and pretty much now the town's about 10,000 because we have no industry left. But their big thing was that, hey, we saved the union, but everybody lost their jobs.
Great.
And the story of the state of Michigan, too.
George, great call tonight. Thanks for making it. I appreciate hearing from you. The toll-free number here is 855-450-FREE.
I certainly don't want to see anybody held back because of the color of their skin, but I also think that sometimes people, racial discrimination to some extent is in the eyes of the perceiver. I believe that I remember, you know, I don't have it right in front of me, but I believe I remember Michelle Obama being, saying that her and Barack had been asked to go get a cup of coffee one time for somebody. And the assumption was that he was probably dressed in a tuxedo and that he looked like
a servant.
The servant, right? And, I can see why somebody might perceive it that way, but I've been in Home Depot wearing an orange shirt before, and I've been asked questions, usually by older white women, about sort of, you know, what is this product or service? How does it work? What is this product? How does it work? How do you use this? And you know what I do? I answer the question as best I possibly can for them.
Sure.
And if I can't answer the question, I say, let me get somebody who works here for you. Oh, you don't work here? And I guess I just have that look of the guy that works at Home Depot. And that's fine by me. I don't think that's, you know, I don't find that as any, I don't think that's disparaging to me because I don't believe I'm better than the people that work at Home Depot.
Right. Told you never. Oh, go ahead.
I think that's different, though.
Okay, why is it?
I mean, you couldn't see like somebody who was a law student or like the head of the Harvard Law Review.
I'm a nationally syndicated radio talk show host. I'm on 170 stations across the country. I could be indignant as I possibly wanted to be with these people.
I agree.
I could spit in that old liberal lady's face and make her feel stupid, but I don't do that because there's no reason for it. If she needs help getting a bag of cement into her cart, I do that because I am not better than the guy at Home Depot who would do it.
It's a nice
not.
Thing to do for people.
That is.
Well, it's not nice. I believe it's an obligation. I believe that that service is an opportunity that I have for other people. Mm-hmm. And if somebody asked me for a cup of coffee, I'd ask them, "Do you take cream or sugar?" And then I might make a joke about, you know, only sissies take cream or sugar. But whatever, you know, like that would be something that would be fine. Let's get you a cup of coffee. If you want a cup of coffee, let's go. Let's get you a cup of coffee real quick. Like,
what do you think, Ian? Do you think there's something in his subconscious that makes him put on that orange shirt when he knows he's going to Home Depot?
I don't have it anymore. It got old. I really, really liked it.
You know, sometimes it doesn't matter what you're wearing. You'll still get
it. I still got it.
You'll still get it. Yeah. I'll get it at Walmart sometimes.
You're just young. You
know? Well, I carry around a two-way radio, and sometimes that'll trigger it.
Yeah.
The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. And unlike Mark, I will do my best to answer whatever the question is. I'll let them know, well, I don't work here, but I think what you're looking for might be over in this area, because I've been in the store often enough to where I kind of know the layout. 855-450-FREE, you can join us here. It's Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live, Saturday edition. Plenty of time for you to join us here at 855-450-FREE. That's the toll-free number, 855-450-3733. Skype username for you is lrn.fm. With you in studio, it's Ian.
Brett.
And Mark.
And we're going to continue here, go right back into your calls and thoughts. We'll start with Chris. He's in Virginia listening to WNIS in Virginia Beach. Hey, Chris.
Hey, how are you doing?
Hey, you're on the radio. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was working, and I listened to WNIS a lot, and I heard the last caller saying, if America's so racist, this, why are there so many black men in the NBA? Why is Will Smith rich? Things like this. This is what we as black people, when we hear things like this, this is what makes us angry. You can't sit up and say just because there are a few hundred men in the NBA, because a sport is dominated by black men, that, the country is not racist. That's like saying, there's no discrimination against gays and lesbians because Willem Grace is on the air, or there's no discrimination against
I don't think
because...
I agree with what you're saying.
Willem Grace
think...
is kind of funny because it was played by a heterosexual guy.
I don't think what the caller was saying was that there was no racism. I think what he was saying was that the country isn't through and through racist, like that there isn't a huge problem with it.
No, there is. That is the point, because the fact that people like him would sit up there and say something like that when it's pretty obvious in this, and you can prove that these things are going on. It's not like Jim Crow was 200 years ago. This is things that my grandparents lived through. Jim Crow.
Sure.
You know, my father lived through things to where his mother was discriminated against, and they were put into the projects, and his mother tried to get out, but, you know, there were housing practices that were going on that were, that were sponsored by the government. We're talking about things that were ingrained in the government, not just people in general, but our country.
Now,
has been raised on racist principles, whether it be when the Constitution was first signed, where we weren't even counted as people, to the Jim Crow laws, to the laws governing, you know, housing and things like that. These things were all basically endorsed by the government of our country. So you can't just say that there's no racism.
Well, I don't think understand. He was saying that.
Yeah, you understand that we're not saying that, and I actually agree with you.
I understand that you're not saying that.
Yeah.
But there are people that think like him
I didn't like the way he said it, because I actually do agree with the caller that it had this kind of feel of sweeping things under the rug a little bit to me.
Correct.
And I say, yeah, you know, let's hear from George, the, what did he call himself, an ambassador to the South. Let's hear from Black Lives Matter. Let's hear from racial realists, you know, and let's have everybody put their cards on the table and argue it out. I think that in my perfect world, and maybe I'm being naive here, I would like to hear that deliberation. The problem that we started talking about at the beginning of the show is that all of the discussion about this is off the table in the media, in the alternative media, like the Twitter sphere, and especially in academia. We are seeing this tyranny of speech, basically, where it's like you can either agree with us or you're a racist. And that's really, really troubling as far as the exchange of ideas and the freedom of speech are concerned. I mean, do you agree that that's a problem? Like I totally agree with what you're saying. There is a history of institutional racism in the United States. I brought it up earlier in the show and we didn't get to it. They were sterilizing Black people, the progressives, the same leftists that, you know, the same ideology that today supports Bernie Sanders. 100 years ago, these people had plans to euthanize Black people in certain areas of the country.
To be honest, to say that these are the same people that are supporting the
same ideology.
We have to go through. We have to talk about Reconstruction. The Dixiecrats became Republicans. These aren't the same people of the same party. Those Democrats became Republicans.
He was talking about progressives, as opposed to, progressivism was what progressivism was at the turn of the century, and it's certainly different than it is today. But what do you think about the sort of the soft bigotry of low expectations? We were talking about that a little bit earlier. The idea that but we should make things easier for certain groups of people, and that they just can't achieve as much as the rest of us. What do you think about that?
Well, in some instances, I think it's needed. I think we need affirmative action. We still need it because we're not on the level playing field. I mean, I remember there was an uproar about that video that was shown in a high school. I forgot where it was. I think it was about a month ago, about the finish line and how we start from one point and you have others that start from, you know, white America starts from one point. I mean, it's mainly true. When you have hundreds of years of oppression of a people, they're not going to be on the same. We're never going to be on the same. Start at the same place.
So that's kind of like white privilege, as it's understood.
Because you start off at a different place when you have money that goes from generation to generation. The wealth is and the power is transferred from generation to generation. We are left behind. A lot of wealth in America, as you know, is built on owning property. Owning homes, owning these things that we've never had to share.
And a lot of property of blacks, especially in black areas, has been burned down by whites, and that's why they're starting from a farther point. But let me tell you this story. I got a friend who's from Romania, communist Romania, before the Iron Curtain fell. He came over here to the United States. He had an opportunity to study in school. He came with $100 in his pocket and a scholarship. He worked, he worked his way out of poverty, and he is now very comfortable. I wouldn't call him rich, but I'm call him very comfortable. When I explained white privilege to him, he said, "Kiss my butt." I would like you to rebut to a Romanian who, you know, he's white, but he doesn't have any of the privilege that is explained here, how he clawed his way up with an accent, with $100 in his pocket, how he can do it. And then there's this thing called white privilege that somehow holds other people back.
That can happen. That can happen with any race. Any race could come here with $100 in their pocket and they're able to work hard enough to do that. But also there have been, as you say, institutionalized racism, which has kept people of color, and not only people of color, but poor people, period. This is not, I think some people get caught up on this, on the black and white thing, but it really is a thing of being
class.
Poor.
I totally agree with that.
I think poor people are held down more than anything, but the majority of blacks are poor, and we have been that way for a long time.
Yeah, it's, and that's really exactly what I was saying earlier tonight, Chris, and it comes back to what you were saying about the level playing field. A lot of people want to use the government to try to level the playing field, but the problem is when that happens is inevitably all that does is it benefits the politically connected. So I think in order to have a truly level playing field, we need to get the government out of the way, because I agree with you that it's the government holding poor people down, and of course that disproportionately affects black people, and it is definitely a class issue. So if the government steps out of the way and then people can start their own businesses without having to beg for permission from some government bureaucrat or these business regulations institutions are placed at a level where the average person cannot reach them, or certainly poor people cannot reach them. Only the rich and well-connected can jump through these hoops in order to start a business up. In a lot of places, you can't even run a business out of your home, which is, of course, the best way to start a business.
I agree with you at some point. Yeah. My mother did the same thing. She tried to run a business out of her home, and she got in trouble because she was a real big person on coupons, and she would get certain items that she would try to sell them out of her home. She got in trouble for that.
What city was that in? Where did they go after her for that?
In Norfolk, Virginia. She was selling things out of her homes, and somebody from found out, and they, you know, told her
some bureaucrat. They threatened her. They said that if you keep selling things from your home, we're going to put you in handcuffs. You're going to go to jail. Because ultimately,
they didn't say that, but that's what they meant.
That's what everyone knows. That's what happens. Thanks for the call, Chris. I do appreciate hearing from you, man. I appreciate you sharing your thoughts tonight. Toll-free number here is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. It's those stories where, you know, the grandma or the mother selling something out of their house, government cracks down, somebody doing hair braiding from their home, someone cooking in their home for other people. These are all illegal in a lot of cities in America. To run any kind of business out of your home is illegal in a lot of places. And this is how people are – their entrepreneurial spirit is crushed by the state, and people of all shapes, colors, and sizes, and ages, and genders. This affects anybody who doesn't have the money or the wherewithal or the ability to hire an attorney to figure out how to jump through whatever arbitrary hoops the government puts up and gets in the way of creating a business.
Morgan Freeman in 2012, when talking to Mike Wallace about Black History Month, basically said he thought it was ridiculous. He says, here talking to Wallace, he says, I don't either. I don't want a Black History Month. Black history is for Black history is American history. I agree with him completely. Wallace says, how are you going to get rid of racism until Freeman says, stop talking about it. I'm going to stop calling you a white man, and I'm going to ask you stop calling me a black man. And I think that that's a solution that I'm looking for here. Is rather than the back and forth, who did what when and who's getting what now and all this other stuff, let's just start anew.
A lot of people want to talk about it. We got time for you if you want to join us. Hour number three is on the way here on Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE is the toll-free number. Also, Skype in at username lrn.fm.
If you want to move to the free state and you're looking for some real estate.
Oof, I think we've all had enough of that jingle, don't you? If you're going to invest in property in New Hampshire, it just makes sense to support a liberty-friendly realtor. Call Mark Warden of Team Porcupine Real Estate for investment property or rentals in the Free State. Or visit his website. Come on, you know it.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.
This is Free Talk Live. We're launching into the third hour of the live Saturday edition of the program. You can join us here toll-free at 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. Also, Skype username here tonight is lrn.fm. Should you want to join us that way, with you in the studio tonight, it's Ian.
Brett.
And Mark.
Brett Vinat joining us from the School Sucks Project at schoolsucksproject.com. As we continue, we're going to go to your phone calls and thoughts. We just barely scratched the surface on this Milo Yiannopoulos, who has been speaking on college campuses. He's a gay guy who's challenging the social justice warrior crowd. That sort of sparked a conversation about college campuses and racism in America. So let's go to your calls and thoughts here. We'll go to Rosemarie first up. She's in Virginia Beach listening to WNIS. Rosemarie, you're on Free Talk Live.
Oh, thank you.
Hey.
I just basically wanted to say that I never thought I was a racist. I had friends and neighbors all along, and I'm over 60 years old, that were black. But I moved down south about a year ago, and I swear to God that all the crime you see, you blame, you know, the police for picking on young black men, but the young teens, the black teens, are the ones that are robbing banks and breaking into stores and breaking into homes and just creating havoc. And that's why the police have provoked, you know, into arresting them.
I've got to say, as a young person, I had some trouble with law enforcement that felt in very, very much like it was unnecessary. Perhaps they were profiling us for being young and having skateboards in our hands. And so I feel like it might be that way for some people. Certainly when you look at, demographics, it's hard to deny that there are a lot of black people in prison. One wonders why that might be. But don't you think there might be some profiling that goes on?
Hmm. ridiculous. I think that as white people, young white kids, sure, you know, we've had our share of, you know, upsets with the police. But as a young white person, we just didn't provoke them like the blacks do.
Well, when I was a young man, I was kind of a terror. If you can't see me through the radio, I'm very white. And I grew up in New Hampshire in a wealthy town in the eastern part of the state called Exeter. It's where one of the most prestigious private preparatory schools in the country is, Phillips Exeter Academy. And we would go out and we would get drunk and smoke weed and drive our car around and go to the golf course when it was closed and push golf carts into ponds and smash mailboxes. But the thing was, there weren't any cops in the, like, patrolling the area. There was maybe like one or two cops on duty in the towns that we lived. So we were getting away with a lot more. I mean, is it possible that this behavior of teenagers, now I'm not even saying that I agree with this, but is it possible that this behavior for teenagers, for young rabble-rouser types, is more widespread and the police just aren't in a lot of places to see it because they are patrolling these neighborhoods more than...
I grew up in New Hampshire and Maine. There are hardly any black people. And 25, 30 years ago, I would say maybe 40 years ago, there were no kids in my school that were black.
Same.
So,
yep.
Yeah, it was a whole different world.
Well, you know, speaking of New Hampshire, we're here in Cheshire County, New Hampshire, which is the southwestern corner of the state. And Cheshire County, if you are a black person, and there aren't very many of them here, but if you are black in Cheshire County, you are 10 times more likely than if you're a black young male, you're 10 times more likely than white young males to be arrested for marijuana possession.
But that's based on arrest statistics, right? So there's a difference there. Like, and what is that?
But that's doesn't that suggest? Yeah. Look, in other counties in New Hampshire, you're two times more. So the lesser, right. So
somehow black people in Cheshire County are five times as bad as black people elsewhere. Is that? I mean, it seems like a real statistical anomaly, doesn't it?
What it seems to me like is, if you're black and you're in New Hampshire, you're more likely to be targeted by the police. That just seems to be the case, because we're not talking about violent crime here. We're talking about marijuana possession. And usually, you only catch someone for marijuana possession if you've done something like pulled them over in the first place. And then, found some sort of evidence. She just disconnected, by the way. Found some sort of evidence and then arrested them. I mean, you don't just... Most of the time, people getting arrested for marijuana possession aren't openly smoking it in the streets. They're getting caught with it under some other circumstance. And so the numbers, statistics suggest there might be some racist cops out there. Now, I don't know how many of the cops are racist. I don't know if the police in New Hampshire are more or less likely to be racist in a place like Baltimore. I don't know. But I suspect that there are racist cops, and I suspect that there is sort of this institutional racism out there. That's not to say that maybe, you know, the statistics are wrong in some ways. For instance, young black males may be more likely to commit crimes because they're poor, perhaps.
Or because their families are broken.
So, sure.
You know, my experience, and this was, you know, I don't like to shift every single, and I feel like it's this instinct in me to do it, and I'm trying to fight it, like shift every problem into like who's to blame that's not black people. But it's like an instinct in me. And I start thinking about like this experience that I had working in this boarding school where my teaching career started back in the year 2000. And you know, I worked as a dorm staff and an outdoor educator, and then I was the lead teacher of a special campus, and then I went on to another school. So I had a lot of experience. We pulled kids from Baltimore, we pulled kids from New York City, Washington, D.C., Providence, Rhode Island. I met one black kid with a dad in the 6 years that I worked there, you know? And I do think that is partially a consequence of the welfare state. That dads, hey, you don't have to stick around anymore.
It incentivizes people
broken families.
Yeah. And creates a society.
To a certain extent. But is it also okay to explore questions about black culture? And I mean, we did this on my show, and it was incredibly controversial. I lost listeners because of it. A historian named Thaddeus Russell wrote a book called The Renegade History of the United States. He talked about this built-in, at least in African Americans, a cultural aversion to work because of... Remember how their experience started in this country.
Right. You might not like work if you were bought, drug across the Atlantic Ocean, whipped several times, given a new name, and told the only reason you're here is to work.
But the other thing, too, is that it's this culture clash, because it combines people who were African where, you know, the types of work that are done in the European world aren't even an issue. They're like foreign concepts with this thing, the Protestant work ethic, where like work is good for the sake of work.
Right.
Do you go to a job? Do you hate it? That's okay. You have value because you drag yourself to a crappy job every day. You have meaning because you make somebody else money. You know, and I think there's elements of the Protestant work ethic that are good, but the idea of working for work's sake, I could see why certain cultures where that's like a really foreign idea, they wouldn't buy into the Protestant work ethic. So when you have this history where Europeans, well, Africans make slaves out of Africans and then make deals with Europeans who want to bring those slaves here, that's a culture clash that is going to have residual effects for centuries, which is what we've seen. But I think that it should be okay to raise questions about cultural predispositions for certain ethnic groups, for certain racial groups, and I think that's a consideration. So what would be cultural prejudices or attitudes amongst Black people historically towards what we call the nuclear family, right? Can we blame the whole thing on the welfare state that like, oh, the government incentivizes Black men to leave their wives after, or they're not their wives, their partners, after they get them pregnant or when they have very young children, because the government will take care of them. Is that the only explanation for why that's happening? I don't think it's fair to just leave it at that, because that transfers responsibility again entirely to somebody else. Now, I'm just bringing this up because it's something that I'm interested in exploring more, and I hope people can be open-minded about that, and that's just not seen as racist for asking that question.
The toll-free number tonight is 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. It is the live Saturday edition of Free Talk Live, should you wish to join us on the radio. It's Free Talk Live. Dial toll-free to join us. 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. And you can find us online anytime you want at freetalklive.com. To the phones, to the fun. Let's go to Richard. He's in North Carolina. You're on Free Talk Live. Hello, Richard.
I want to talk about the subject of mutual respect. And I think if white America and Black America would have mutual respect, you know, a lot of problems would disappear. And we have to have a way to, I have to have a way to measure mutual respect.
Yeah.
And the question that I do is, I ask people, go back to your last conversation with a Jew. You know, political conversation, like a conversation like this. And I want to know the last time you told a Jew in that conversation, just forget about the Holocaust. Well, it seems you wouldn't do that. But every day on radio stations and talk shows, I hear people telling Blacks, just forget about your Holocaust.
To forget about
Don't
slavery.
Bring it up. That's, you know, you see what I'm saying? And the Black Holocaust was 10 times worse than the Jewish Holocaust.
How would you measure that?
When you say the Black Holocaust, are you referring to Hitler exterminating Blacks, or are you referring to slavery in America?
I'm saying that slavery in America from 1604 to the end of slavery period, which was 1974, there were 10 times scholars, people that died over that 400-year period or 250-year period. So it was worse.
They died as the result of being slaves. And a follow-up question after you answer that, where do you get the year 1974 for the end of slavery? I'm not contesting that. I'm just interested in where that year comes from.
Oh, okay, sure. So 1974, credible scholars know that there were two parts of slavery in America. 1604, Jamestown, up until 1974. The two parts of slavery were chains, and the other parts of slavery were Jim Crow.
Okay, I was curious because I didn't know if you were talking about like a lot of similar types of setups as far as economics in the South continued after the abolition of slavery through things like sharecropping and tenant farming. Anyone who's seen the movie Ray about Ray Charles, that's the situation into which he was born, I think, in the 1910s or the 1920s. And yeah, of course, the laws in the South had, you know, residual effects from the slave era and from Reconstruction well into the 20th century. So I don't know. I don't disagree with any of that. I think what I'm saying is when you talk about telling a Jew to forget about the Holocaust, how would you feel if you heard me tell a German, say my age, let's say mid-30s, I went up to a German and said, "You're responsible for the Holocaust." A German in his mid-30s living in Germany today. Would that be fair of me to pin responsibility for the Holocaust on him or her?
If he was operating the ovens.
Well, no, but he wasn't. He's 30 to 40 years old.
There aren't too many white people alive who've owned chattel slaves in the United States.
Well, wait a minute now. That's not as accurate. Most were.
Most were what?
Most were slaves, chattel slavery, under chattel slavery.
I know, but most white people alive today who... I agree that no one should tell any black person to forget about black history. But I'm turning it around because I think that's completely outrageous. And that was the issue that I took with an earlier caller who said, well, you know, I haven't seen much racism and I've been in the South my whole life. I've never seen anyone in a Klan outfit. And I called him on that and I said, well, that's kind of a selective example, your experience. So I don't think anything should be ignored or swept under the carpet, or it seems like a real conservative thing that we won't address a problem simply by pretending the problem absolutely doesn't actually exist. But I also want to be able to turn it around and say, just like I wouldn't say to a Jew, forget about the Holocaust, would you also take objection to somebody saying to a German, you know, the age of the people on the radio with you tonight, which is like early 30s to mid 40s, if I was to blame a German that age for the Holocaust, wouldn't there also be a kind of problem with collectivism there, blaming them just because they're a German?
Let me answer that question. That's easy. All credible scholars say that there are two parts of slavery. There's the chattel slavery and Jim Crow.
Okay, and Jim Crow ended in 1974. Like you said, I was born in 1974.
We've got to get other people on here. But thank you. It's been a great call. I appreciate your thoughts. The toll-free number here, 855-450-FREE. That's the toll-free number, 855-450-3733. I do think that this deserves further discussion. We'll continue, and you can join us here as well. Skype username's lrn.fm. This is Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. You can join us here. The conversation has mostly been about race tonight.
All we had to do was say the name Milo Yiannopoulos.
Yes, pretty much. We never really got into his story. Mark, you read, what, a paragraph or two from some sort of essay written by this guy? Milo Yiannopoulos, who's going around stirring it up on college campuses. I was interested in hearing more about it, but as sometimes happens frequently on our Saturday show, it's wall-to-wall phone calls. So we're going to continue with your calls and thoughts, because that's what we do here. We go to your calls, your thoughts. Scott, listening in Indianapolis to WIBC-FM. Scott, you're on Free Talk Live.
Hey, gentlemen.
Hey there.
I've got a friend in the Indianapolis area who's from Nigeria. Actually, I've got quite a few people I know from Nigeria. And, you know, his experience is totally different, obviously. But point being that, you know, when you're in Nigeria, if there's somebody that's, quote, unquote, keeping you down, that person isn't a white person.
True.
You know, and so...
It was 40 years ago.
Yeah. It was a long time ago in, you know, 74, if you want to count that date. But point being that he and I were out having a beer one night, and I was complaining about how something didn't go right in my life. And he basically said, BS. He said, you're in charge.
of how things happen in your life.
Yeah, and that's the most empowered position that one can take, right? It it may or may not be true in every circumstance, but if you take that attitude that you're the center of cause in your own universe, then that's a way to feel really empowered about everything that goes on.
Well, I think that comes back. Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Considering all the people that I know in the Indianapolis area, he is one of the most successful people I'm associated with on a personal level.
Yeah, well, that's definitely the attitude that a successful person would have to have. I mean, to be at cause in your life and to not blame other people for problems that you might have is something that you probably would do in order to become successful, to take personal responsibility. I mean, if you're constantly pointing the finger at other people for your problems, then you're probably not a self-starter. You're probably not entrepreneurial. But I think, you know, what you're saying kind of comes back to what the last caller was saying about, you know, forgetting the Holocaust or forgetting the past, forgetting slavery, these ideas. And I think it's important that you shouldn't forget history. It's important to learn from history so we can move on and have a better future. So I think there's a difference between forgetting history, which I don't recommend, but also sticking in the past, like living as though you're still in that moment. You're still in whatever that time frame was. Things may not be perfect today, but I think it would be hard for anyone to argue that they're not better for everyone across the board, whatever your skin color, whatever your age, whatever gender, that things are generally better all around the globe for people in general. And I think that if you can live in the moment, if you can focus on yourself, your life as it is right now, then that's not forgetting about the past or not learning from the past. You've learned from the past, but you're focusing on what's happening to you now. I think that's an important distinction.
Absolutely. Being able to honestly answer the question, what is and what can I do about it, is very empowering.
We can't do anything about the past. That's over.
Right. But a lot of this conversation tonight has been about trying to avoid the avoidance of even asking the question, what is. It's like, go to college and they'll say, oh, it's like this. You're the victim.
Right.
You didn't know you were the victim? Well, let us tell you about how you are, right? Which is the complete opposite of what your friend said to you in the bar.
That's a socialist position, too.
And you're absolutely right.
My friend is by far the biggest capitalist I know, and he works his butt off.
Scott, good call, man. Thanks for making it tonight. I appreciate the perspective. Toll-free number here, 855-450-FREE. Dave is also in Indianapolis, listening to WIBC. Hey, Dave.
Hello, hippies. Good Saturday night. The caller before Scott, the older gentleman that called in, I'm listening, and I keep hearing the same thing from leftists. And I say specifically leftists because I'm not going to play the race game, and I'm also not going to accept responsibility for something I didn't do. That's a great crime to let somebody, you know, compel you to feel guilty for something you did not do. What that guy did was, it's the same thing leftists do every time. They take a racial group, they take blacks, and they'll say, okay, collectively, this has happened to us. Collectively, you guys have done it to us, and this is what we need to remedy the situation. Now, he went into a lot of history.
But I wanted to see if he actually was going to do that. Like, he didn't get a chance to answer my question when I turned it around and said, okay, would you blame all Germans alive today?
He had two chances actually to answer that
question. Yeah, I gave him two, and he didn't answer the question, which might be indicative of the problem you're bringing up. But
he wasn't going to answer that question because he only used that scenario with the Jews and the Germans to try to bolster his own point. I doubt that guy cared what happened in Germany, you know. So many years ago. Here's my point. I have three big problems with, again, a leftist who happens to be black, assuming the moral high ground. They ignore three very important things that are going on right now, not 40 years ago. One, and this is government statistics, the illegitimacy rate in the quote-unquote black community. Two, the fact that of the 40 million unborn human beings who have been killed by Planned Parenthood since right around 1973, about half of them have been black. Now, I'm pretty sure, I'd bet a few bucks that not 20 million people were killed during the time of slavery. And three, the biggest threat to a young black man is not a white cop. It's another young black man. Now, those three things are sad. But for people like that older gentleman to completely ignore those three points, I give him no street cred, no pun intended. If you're going to assume the moral high ground, if you're going to talk about loss of life as it pertains to a particular group of people, you have got to include everything. And much of the pain that goes on in the African American community is self-inflicted. We tend to, and I say we, white, Caucasian, European, I would go free market capitalist, tend to avoid areas that are predominantly Democrat, read collectivist, statist, socialist, because right. one of the key tenets in statism is the absolute denial of personal responsibility.
Indeed.
Everything that happens to you is a condition that was brought on by someone else.
Dave, thanks for your call tonight. Appreciate it, man. Toll-free number here, 855-450-FREE. 855-450-3733. We'll continue. We may have time to get you on the air with us here if you're on hold. If you're not already on hold, you probably shouldn't bother calling in at this point.
I got to say, I've been gritting my teeth through this whole thing. It's just like it feels like walking through a minefield race on Free Talk Live. It's a tough topic. And anybody can call in with it, you know, right? Like everybody's got an opinion on this, and it.
Moments remain here. Maybe enough time for you if you're already on the lines. This is Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live, and you can join us here. I'm not going to give you the phone lines at this point because, well, they're loaded with calls and. Sorry to say, there's just no way we're going to get to everybody here tonight. But tomorrow, we're back on the live Sunday edition of Free Talk Live. And Brett, you will not be here Sunday night. You'll be back in your studios in Manchester. And I don't know when you produce School Sucks Project. I imagine it's at whatever time you feel comfortable because it's a podcast. You can record it whenever you want.
Yeah, I work with a lot of guests. So I schedule around people's availability. Coming up this week, I have Julia Torjanskaya.
Oh,
From Brave the World, yes. YouTube channel, and she's also really prominent in the Bitcoin community. And then probably at the end of the week, I'll have Jeffrey Tucker, and we'll be talking about the creative process, which
School
is our
Sucks
theme.
Project. SchoolSucksProject.com. Go check out more Brett there. There's plenty of episodes, years worth, that you could download.
Six years.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you very much.
That's a long run. I don't know how long the average podcast lasts.
7 episodes.
Is that right?
Thank you guys for inspiring me to do a show, by the way.
Oh, you're welcome. It's our pleasure. Let's go to Isis calling from Indianapolis. Isis, you're on Free Talk Live.
Hello. And I just knew as soon as I decided to take a bite of this Jimmy John's, you'd pick up the phone. So I have to apologize. To give you a little bit of background here, first of all, and the reason I'm saying this is because you have so many people on the phone this evening from Indiana. I'm actually in Carmel, but didn't think that Carmel would mean anything, but this will mean something when I tell you the story. I just moved back here from Bedford, New Hampshire, and that probably means something to you there as well.
It's kind of a soccer mom town, suburban.
When you say Bedford, you have to keep your teeth stuck together. You see it like Thurston Howell III.
With a lot of underbite.
Well, the reason I say that is because I'm a black woman who is also a conservative, married to a black man, who every single solitary time we would basically want to go home, we would get pulled over.
Wow.
So the fact that I'm even saying this, and I'm not the type of person who has ever fed into racism or anything else. And my call this evening has nothing to do with me being angry. It has to do with me kind of being a bit hurt by the woman who said she grew up in Maine and New Hampshire and things. And I hear this a lot from people. Part of the reason why these things exist is because a lot of Caucasians also believe it never happened. And again, this to me is a socioeconomic issue, not a racial issue. And I'll prove my point. So, little Asian kids sitting in a classroom full of Caucasians, blacks, whatever else. Now, we just automatically assume that little Asian kid is smart as all get out. So what are we putting upon that little stupid Asian kid?
Can't be very easy for him.
But no, I'm saying, what happened, what kind of psychological damage do we do to the stupid Asian kid?
I don't know. I think that
because
people thinking
assume,
you're smart is probably better than people thinking you're dumb.
No, that's my point. If you automatically thought that you're smart, what happens to the one that isn't?
I assume that they probably achieve at a higher level than they normally would, which is to say that they can probably shovel a little faster than the other ditch diggers. I'm just guessing. I don't know.
But that's my point.
Right.
It has nothing to do with race. It has to do with the people who rear you. My grandfather used to say all the time that you play in the uniform in which you are dealt.
Well,
and you
ISIS,
also,
I'm confused, though. You said you got pulled over a lot when you were in New Hampshire. Wouldn't you say
absolutely.
Has to do with your race?
That's my whole point. So to say that a person, that these things don't happen and there is no profiling, my husband never went into the Navy. And here's the reason why he did not go into the Navy. Because when he was going there to be inducted, one of the people told him that we don't take drug dealers here.
Oh, God.
My husband has never even smoked a cigarette in his entire life. He went there with three other buddies of his that were all Caucasian. None of them got that story.
I bet.
Okay, but there's a difference
not to
there.
Go into the Navy.
But there's an important difference there between institutional racism, which certainly, beyond any doubt or argument, at one time existed in the U.S. military, and an anecdotal experience with one bigoted person that he might have had to talk to that day.
Well, now, my sisters-in-law told me not to go to certain cities. My husband got pulled over one time, and the cop said the reason why he pulled him over is because he looked like he was going to run the light.
Well,
he didn't run the light. And that's exactly what he said.
I can't argue against that one. I agree with you.
Look, I'd like to point something out here. ISIS, I appreciate your perspective, and I agree with you. I mean, I just would like to say I absolutely think that there's institutional racism, that there are racist cops, and I think you've given yet another example of this. It sounds like you guys are, you know, a well-to-do couple. You weren't driving a beater, right? Like, so you were just driving a regular car.
Little bit more background. Four of my nephews accepted into Phillips Exeter. My husband is a chemical engineer with a master's degree in nuclear medicine.
Right. It's driving while
he's
black.
He's a thug. A drug-dealing thug, ISIS.
Hey, ISIS, great call. Thanks for making the call
Thank you, sharing ISIS.
Your story with us tonight. We're just out of time, unfortunately, because I would have loved to continue.
Evening,
yes,
gentlemen.
We will.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. And if you didn't get in tonight, don't worry. We're back tomorrow night, 7 o'clock at night Eastern Time is when we start. 7 nights a week. You can join us online anytime at freetalklive.com.